Well, after all the lead up to Christmas, all the shopping, all the Christmas events, all the food, all the festive music, all the TV specials, that's it. We've passed the crescendo of the season, and other than maybe, you know, the odd leftover Christmas thing yet to do, it's over. We've officially arrived on the other side. You know, the Christmas story itself has an other side to it as well. And by that, I mean, even though we tell the story as though Mary and Joseph's trek to Bethlehem was the equivalent of a one-hour WestJet flight, and then within the space of like 12 hours, they settle in for the night, have a baby, a group of angels puts on a Broadway production, and then there's a couple back-to-back parties with unique guest lists. The truth is that at least one group of characters in the story most likely didn't show up in time to actually be part of that frenetic night. These are, of course, the travelers from the East, likely photoshopped into Mary and Joseph's Christmas portrait well after the fact, after all the excitement and fanfare was in the rearview mirror and Jesus was already crawling around getting into mischief. If you value being historically accurate, you probably need to take the figurines of these guys out of your nativity set, or at the very least, set them up on the other side of your house somewhere. Matthew is the gospel writer who tells us about the story of these guys. And it goes like this. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and we've come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. All right, there you have it. It's the story of the three what? That's a good question. What are these guys? Now, first off, we have to admit that the traditional designation of three is up for debate. Just because your nativity set came with three of them, don't let that fool you. We're not told that there's three of these guys. That's simply someone's guess based on the fact that there were three kinds of gifts. Maybe there were just two of them, and they were really generous. Maybe there were 18 of them and they decided to chip in together to come up with three great birthday gifts instead of 18 lame ones. Whatever the truth is, how many there were isn't the question I want to explore this morning. What I want to explore is who they were, what they were. Because if you think about it, there isn't one singular designation that these men are given when we refer to them at Christmas. I mean, the shepherds are just the shepherds. That's all they're called. The angels, well, they're the angels. But these latecomers, well, that's a little bit less clear. Now, from a literal point of view, if we just look at the word Matthew chooses, they are magi, magi from the east. That's what the text says. But I suspect that in casual conversation around Christmas, that's actually the title for these guys that we use the least. They're the wise men, probably most often, except when we sing, right? Then it's we three kings. So which is it? Maybe Matthew's use of of that word magi is more obscure in terms of our understanding today, because he wasn't writing to Canadians in the 21st century. Maybe the audience he was writing to would have well understood what he meant. Or maybe his use of the term magi is to take advantage of a certain fluidity in terminology, meant to make us think a little more about what we're actually reading, ask more questions about these mysterious individuals. I say the terminology is fluid because even in the Old Testament, this sort of family of designations, if you will, seems to almost be used interchangeably at times. So for example, in Esther chapter 1, there's this scene where the king calls together seven individuals who, based on their role in the story, seem very clearly to be magi. But as we read the text, we note that these magi are called wise men, and then shortly thereafter, they're designated as princes. So we see right there in the Bible itself that, you know, in a way, the lines between magi and wise man and royalty may not have been all that clear. So back to our story. What are these travelers? What should we call them? Well, if you want to call them magi, I say go for it. After all, that is the technical term Matthew uses, so you can't go wrong with it. In the context of our story, magi would understood to be astrologers and interpreters of omens. These are guys given the job of ascertaining the messages from the gods by watching stars and interpreting dreams. Our magi arrive in Jerusalem, make a beeline for the palace, and ask the existing king where the guy who's going to replace him has just been born, because they've seen his astrological sign. Clearly, they don't feel any ambiguity about this. They're not making an educated guess. They're not saying they have some gut feeling about it. I mean, I highly doubt they would have spoken so bluntly to the king about his replacement, traveling quite a distance to honor this future king instead of Herod, no less. Probably wouldn't have said that if they were unsure about what was happening. No, these are stargazing nerds, and they are absolutely convinced that what they have interpreted the star to mean is simply a matter of fact. Where is the one who's been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we've come to worship him. I imagine Herod choked on his morning coffee when he heard that. While these magi were foreigners, the idea of magi wasn't foreign to the Jewish people. There were Jews who themselves had functioned as magi during the exile. And in fact, they were some of the best magi. In the book of Daniel, we read that Daniel and his friends were found to be 10 times better than the whole lot of magicians and enchanters of the land. The Greek text terms these guys magi. When King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream and none of the rest of his magi can help him with it, it's Daniel who not only gives the interpretation, he tells the king what he actually dreamed in the first place. And as a result, the king elevates Daniel to be ruler of the entire province of Babylon and head over all the other magi. It's a series of events that reminds us of another Israelite who was asked to interpret a dream that none of the other magi could. Joseph was brought out of a prison cell to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And when he did, he, like Daniel, was given a new position. He went from being incarcerated to being made second in command in the whole of Egypt. When it comes to magi, Israel could boast having two of the most prominent magi of their time, even while living as exiles in a foreign land, nonetheless. So feel free to call these travelers magi. Matthew does. But if that's the term you choose, make sure you consider the fullness of that meaning. In the Old Testament, it was Israelites going into exile in a foreign land who were the important magi of the stories, magi in service to a foreign king. The Christmas story turns the tables on that. It's magi from a foreign land who find their way to Israel and give service, give worship, no less, to Israel's king. And in this story, the king isn't a grand pharaoh or a great Nebuchadnezzar. The king is a baby. Yes, all the characters in our Christmas story knew something was special about Jesus. But perhaps it's only these foreign magi who really, fully understood, because of their interpretation of the divine message in the sky, that this was divine royalty lying before them. Perhaps they were the only ones who knew they were giving service to a king, the one to whom all authority on heaven and earth would be given. So call them magi if you wish, but if you do, make sure that you see what they see when you look into the manger. This is the king of the universe lying there. Maybe magi seems too foreign a word. Maybe you prefer to call them wise men. After all, I think most people do, and that's perfectly fine too. Though magi is the word used in Matthew, the designation for wise men appears more frequently in the Old Testament than the word for magi. The Christian reformer Martin Luther, in reading the story of these travelers coming from the East to see Jesus, he noticed some interesting connections between their story and another event recorded in the Bible. Foreigners from Arabia bringing gifts and seeking wisdom in Jerusalem. That sounds like a new take on an old story. In 1 Kings 10, the Queen of Sheba heard incredible stories about the King of Israel, a man named Solomon. So she decided to investigate for herself. She traveled to Jerusalem, coming armed with her hardest questions to put to this Israelite king. And what did she discover? That had game shows existed back in the day, Solomon would have been Jeopardy world champion. There was nothing she asked that he couldn't answer. Solomon's wisdom, according to the author of 1 Kings, was greater than the wisdom of all the people of the East and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. The Queen of Sheba was so taken by his wisdom that she presented Solomon with 120 talents of gold, precious stones, and a quantity of spices never seen before or seen since in the land. Solomon himself, in his own writings, described wisdom as a person existing in the remote eons before our world came into being. Wisdom was right there, he says, playing alongside God as he formed the universe. After Jesus had grown up, he made this astonishing claim. He referred to himself as something greater than Solomon is here. For all the wisdom that Solomon had, it was the baby in the manger who was the one who surpassed him. For in that child was the wisdom of the ages, existing before time began. So call the travelers from the East wise men if you want. But if you do, then recognize that this baby is the wisdom of God in the flesh, come to show us how to live, to truly live. Listen to him. His words are life. Follow where he leads. He knows the way. Maybe you're a Christmas Carol fan, and We Three Kings is one of your favorites of all time. Maybe you're a sucker for Christmas pageants and nativity scenes, which seem to always put crowns on the heads of these travelers. So maybe you prefer to call these men kings. If you prefer this designation, then you stand in line with the medieval church, for example, who seemed partial to that designation. Even earlier on than that, as early as the church father Tertullian in the second century, these men are given a kingly designation. Tertullian came to that conclusion by his examination of various scriptures, not the least of which were a few lines in Isaiah 60, which read, "Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. And all from Sheba will come, bringing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord." Sounds kind of like Matthew 2, doesn't it? Which, if they are kings, here's another ironic twist. Back in the Old Testament, King Hezekiah received an envoy from the east, hosting this group of diplomats in Jerusalem. The king, maybe a bit too full of himself, or maybe just had a lapse of judgment, showed them all the wealth that he had amassed. He showed them his stockpile of gold, of silver, his spices, all his fine olive oil. Whatever he thought would impress them, he toured them around to see. In fact, when the prophet Isaiah asked him, "What did you show them?" the king's response was, "There is nothing among my treasures that I didn't show them." Isaiah wasn't amused. Neither was God, apparently. The prophet, speaking for God, said to Hezekiah, "The time will surely come when everything in your palace and all that your predecessors have stored up until this day will be carried off to Babylon. Nothing will be left." And sure enough, the day came when Nebuchadnezzar did exactly that, taking the treasures of Jerusalem, taking the treasures in the temple of Jerusalem back to his land. Ironic then, how in our story, we read of a group of kings from the east returning to Jerusalem and bringing back to the city the very kinds of things that centuries earlier had been plundered and taken away. Ironic, or divinely ordained? As Tertullian pointed out, Isaiah, who had prophesied against Hezekiah, was the one who later also prophesied that one day, foreigners would come to rebuild the city walls. Foreign kings would come to the city bearing gifts of gold and incense. They would come with praise of God on their lips. So if you want to call the travelers in our story kings, go for it. Just don't miss the richness that choosing that path adds to the Christmas story. Kings bringing the stolen treasures of Jerusalem back to the city. A signal that the beginning of the eternal building, rebuilding of David's kingdom, the kingdom of God no less, is at hand. The child in the manger has come to inaugurate the restoration of all things. He has come to make all things new again. So magi, wise men, kings, take your pick. Each of these titles helps us see a unique and awesome truth that the Christmas story means to tell us. Sure, these guys might be late to the party compared to the rest of the Christmas characters, but if you take them out of the nativity scene, you risk missing something incredibly profound. So by all means, make space for them beside the manger. And as you do, let them remind you about the wonder of the Christmas story. Let them introduce you afresh to Jesus, King of the universe, Wisdom of the ages, Restorer of God's kingdom.